Yesterday we returned to Paul's letter to the Galatians, and we were doing a recap of his delusional comments relative to his selection and his inspiration. We began in Galatians 1:11, and we're going through 1:17. Let me reprise what we covered yesterday, and then we'll move on. But nevertheless, I profess and I reveal. That's standard Pauline speak. But I say, and this is but nevertheless, regardless of what anybody else says, this is what I say. You know, it's so different than Yahweh's actual messengers who say, this is what Yahweh says, and then Yahweh speaks in first person through them, but not with Paul. But nevertheless, I profess and reveal to you, brothers, of the beneficial message having been communicated advantageously by and through myself, because it is not in accord with man, but neither because I, by associating myself with it, nor was I taught or instructed as a disciple, but to the contrary, by way of a revelation, appearance, serving to uncover and unveil Iesu Christu. Obviously, it was not Iesu Christu that was there. Well, even if you were to correctly name him, the Messiah Yahusha, he told his disciples, those who he actually instructed as disciples, that if anyone claims to have seen an appearance of him, do not follow that individual. They are a liar. So Paul is confessing that it was Paul of whom Yahusha was speaking. For because indeed you heard of my wayward behavior in some time and place in the practice of Judaism, namely that because throughout, showing superiority surpassing any measure of restraint and to an extraordinary degree better than anyone else, I was aggressively and intensely pursuing, harassing the called out of God, and I was devastating them, continuing to undermine, overthrow, and annihilating them. And so I was and continue to progress, accomplishing a great deal by annihilating people. And I persist moving forward in the practice of Judaism, folks. Judaism does not annihilate people. Paul was misrepresenting the religion. Over and beyond many contemporaries of my race, excessively and overabundantly, enthusiastically zealous and burning with passion, a vehement adherent, belonging to the traditions and teachings handed down by my forefathers. These are the very teachings that Yahusha condemned, that Yahweh condemns throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He's speaking here of the oral law of the Talmud, the very thing that Yahusha spoke against. Paul is saying that he was zealous on behalf of. Again, demonstrating that Paul is not to be trusted. But at a point in time when it pleased and was chosen enjoyable and better for God, the one having appointed me, setting me aside out of the womb of my mother, to reveal and disclose, uncovering and unveiling the Son of Him, in order that I would announce the healing message among the races immediately. He did not ask the advice, I did not ask the advice or consult with flesh and blood. Now, mind you, that immediately Yahweh set to disclose the nature of the Son of Him, and through the prophet Yeshayah, this would be 750 years before Paul was even in his mommy's womb. So if you're looking for immediate presentation of the Son of Him and to reveal the Son of Him accurately, that was done 750, almost 800 years before Paul was born. It explains how the Son was given, how the child was born. And it described who that child would be very accurately. And it then depicts precisely what he would do on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, and what the benefit would be for all of us. He is vividly presented there. He's also vividly presented by David, in the Psalms, particularly Psalm 22 and 88. which depict his fulfillment of the Torah, particularly Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. If you want him presented immediately, the presentation is found 1,000 years before Paul was born by David, Dod, in his Psalms. And then when Yosha actually came to exist inside of Yisrael as a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, he picked 12 disciples, individuals that he taught who he was, explained what he was doing. And they shared who he was and what he was doing almost immediately, seven sevens from his fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim on Shavuot. They were empowered and enriched with Yahweh's Torah teaching and the ability to speak the languages of all humankind, all of the ethnicities of the world, specifically the ethnicities of the world, to proclaim the truth immediately. And they did. And that would be 17 years before Paul would write his first letter. They were empowered to present the truth to all of the world's ethnicities immediately. That means that Paul is lying here too. And it didn't please God that Paul would speak for him. Yeah, it was exactly 666 years before Paul wrote this first letter to the Galatians. Spoke through the prophet Chabaouk Habachuk, telling all who would listen that Shaul, which was Paul's given name, would be the plague of death. And there is no mistake that he is talking about this Paul. It describes his character, describes the timing that of when he would come onto the scene, describes his ego, describes his opposition to circumcision, describes his fascination with the male genitalia, describes his circular reasoning, describes his audience, his Gentiles. It has everything that you could ever want to know about Paul, and then says he is the plague of death. So I can guarantee you that Yahweh did not choose him from the womb of his mother. That is just another arrogant lie being promoted by the most dangerous, the most despicable, the most deadly, the most deceitful man who ever lived. He said, I did not ascend into Jerusalem towards the goal of being with or against the apostles before me, but to the contrary, I went away, withdrawing to Arabia, and returned to Damascus. That's not true either, according to his testimony through Luke and Acts. Paul wanted everyone to believe that he was more important and better prepared than Yosha's disciples, and that his calling superseded theirs. That's why he was called in his mother's womb, so he could beat them. According to Paul, both the disciples and he spent 3 years, based upon Paul's testimony in the next verse, in Yosha's presence. But Paul, unlike the others, received private one-on-one instruction. And yet, since Paul's testimony was false regarding the keystone of his credibility, the entire edifice of Pauline doctrine crumbles, as does the religion of Christianity, which is based upon it. So if you're still a Christian, you may not be ready to process what all of this actually means. I rejected a religion, the religion of Christianity, for a relationship with Yahweh. I did so around a decade or so ago, but until recently, I couldn't deal with the errors or the conflicts in Paul's testimony either. For example, the raw strength that Paul was said to have increased in was a term that only he used. The other seven times this verb is found in the Greek text, they are all in his epistles. Therefore, since it is not said by or used by anyone else or said of anyone else, We know that this rather egotistical personal evaluation of raw strength came from Paul himself, not his audience or God. Apart from Paul, each time a unique capability is described or ascribed to an individual, it comes from the set-apart spirit, and it is called dunamis power in Greek, as is the case of Acts 1:8 during the fulfillment of Shavuot, seven Sabbaths. It's never ened dun amuto, raw strength. Also troubling, the first achievement Paul would claim on his own behalf was sigcheo, confounding, baffling, and confusing Jews. That is the antithesis of Yahweh's purpose, which is to use his Torah to teach his children, to educate them. There is but one spirit who would boast about confounding and deceiving others, the very spirit that Paul admitted possessed him. A Christian apologist might say that the change in Paul's behavior and message confused the Jews, but that excuse is undermined by Paul's insistence, that he remain true to Judaism. Moreover, Luke expressed two separate thoughts, initially saying that those who listened to Paul were amazed by his oratory. Then, after telling us that Paul's physical power increased, Luke said that Paul went on to befuddle his would-be antagonists. The inference is that he was too clever for them to effectively repute, at least according to Paul. But that is not how Yahweh works. He doesn't want to confuse. He wants to enlighten. He doesn't want to mislead. He wants to guide. The alleged plot whereby the Jews conspired to do away with the self-proclaimed messenger of God, which was foiled by a revelation and uncanny escape, as I've mentioned before, is virtually identical to the story Muhammad was inspired to tell us 600 years hence, at the inception of the Islamic era. Same exact story, same spirit. Yes, indeed. This is all demonic. We'll return after the break. Yes, indeed. Muhammad would use the same story, that his God had warned his disciples that the Meccans were out to get him, and they would sneak him out of town, just as Paul was claiming of the Jews, that they were secretly out to get him, and the only way that his life could be spared is not for God to save him, not for God to protect him, because he didn't know God. God didn't know him. No, the only way for him to be protected was for him to get into a fetal position in a basket and to be lowered out of a window, to be whisked away and saved by his faithful. Well, as I said, Muhammad made exactly the same claim. And then in the immediate aftermath of this, quoted the satanic verses. Muhammad said that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan, which is what Paul was doing. Muhammad then imagined that he had flown to Jerusalem, as opposed to the mythical journey to Arabia. But similar story. I mean, the stories are uncannily similar. He did it at night, where he visited with Moses and Esau. Esau is the Quranic Jesus, which is actually a transliteration of Esau, the person whom God says he hates. Prior to visiting multiple levels of heaven, something that Paul also claims in his in a different letter, in the second letter to the Corinthians. Then, after the so-called messenger of God told the Meccans this tall tale, they conspired to kill him. But Allah revealed their plot, and Satan's messenger, slithered out of town by miraculous means under the cover of darkness. It's the same story. So perhaps it was authored by the same spirit, and that's the problem. Because in the Quran, Allah was modeled after Satan, and he brags that he is the best schemer. The other problems associated with Shaul's testimony begin with the realization that it is inappropriate for him to have his own disciples That would be, and that's what he was inferring when they whisk him away. It was as if he was trying to impersonate the Messiah, something that he will claim and has claimed already. And further incriminating his account, as I have previously hinted, Jews under Roman dominion had no authority to kill anyone, especially in Syria, and most especially a Roman citizen like Paul. So this whole thing was just made up. The Sanhedrin didn't have the authority to kill Yosha, which is why they begged the Roman authorities to do it for them. This whole sordid affair is preposterous from beginning to end. Now, if you're into fairy tales, then embrace the notion that this self-proclaimed murderer, this man of enormous physical strength, was a newborn prophet lowered in a basket to save him from baffled and marauding Jews, and not to replicate the story of Moshe, where God's messenger was simply spared from impending death. The second of five proofs that the Arabian sojourn is a myth is a derivative of Paul's purpose in writing this epistle. Galatians was composed to accomplish two goals. Paul wanted to differentiate his message from the Torah, and to accomplish that feat, he would have to be an extraordinarily credible witness. Therefore, the first two chapters focus on establishing his personal qualifications. But since everyone knew that Paul didn't walk in Yosha's footsteps and was not a disciple and was not an eyewitness and did not thereby benefit from the 3 years of training at God's feet as the disciples had done, Paul had to make up a story which would appear to be the unsuspecting mind to put him on similar footing. 3 years in Arabia with a Messiah would do the trick. If it were true. But if Paul's claim to have met with God in the Arabian desert was true, then it would make God a liar. After all, while standing on the Mount of Olives, Yahusha warned us, if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Messiah, or there he is, do not believe him. It's from Matanyah. Yahweh gives Matthew 24:23. A couple days ago, Larry read that whole prophecy regarding Paul to us. God himself told us that if someone claimed that they had seen him, just as Paul was now doing, that they were lying. Do not believe them. So why do Christians include his letters in their New Testament? Why do they believe him? Stupid, isn't it? Now, further impugning Paul, who was the only one we know who made these claims, Yosha went on to say, and I'm going to share something that Larry shared with us a couple of days ago when we return to Shattering Myths. He is further impugning Paul for all who are willing to listen to Yosha. He said, for false messiahs, if you're reading your English Bible, it would say false Christs, and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders. That was something Paul constantly bragged of, that he was able to show great signs and wonders. It's when you have someone claim to perform signs and wonders, you're almost always looking at someone who's satanically inspired. Yahweh doesn't show off. Yahweh's prophets seldom, if ever, perform signs and wonders. Yahweh's prophets deliver his testimony. His testimony is the sign. His testimony is the wonder. It is wonderful. It's signed by him. It carries forth his name. It embraces his character. It reveals his guidance. It is a sign in the sense that it conveys all of human history, past, present, and future, all of it precisely accurate, which is one of the wonders of it. You know, for those who may go see the movie Interstellar, it really revolves around a father's love for his daughter. But the science of the movie focuses on relativity. And it's one of the great signs and wonders of Yah's testimony is how he used relativity to explain to us that from his perspective, as the creator, as a witness to creation, creation took 6 24-hour Earth days, which we can now do the math based upon the residue, the cosmic radiation that is detectable from the Big Bang. It's 14 billion years. Time clock on Earth here looking back. 6 24-hour days. They're equivalent based on relativity. That's one of the benefits of seeing the movie, to put somebody in the right frame of mind relative to the whole concept of how Yah's testimony is presented. And so beyond the miraculous nature of the testimony, God doesn't show off and his prophets don't show off. But Satan's do. That's why this, he says, you know, this person, those show great signs and wonders. And they do so, according to Yahusha, so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect, even the chosen. And Paul did. Behold, I have told you in advance. If therefore they say to you, behold, here he is in the desert, do not go forth. Or behold, here he is in the inner rooms, do not believe him. For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Matanyah. Yahweh gives Matthew 24 through 28. He's saying that when he returns, everyone's going to see him from east to west at the same time. It's like lightning. Everyone will see him at the same time. He will return that way. He will not be, as Paul described him, seen only to him. And if someone claims that, they're lying. This is, of course, is a death blow to the veracity of Paul's testimony. If Yahusha has told us the truth, then Paul was lying about the meeting with him, along with the wilderness along that road to Damascus, and again about seeing him in the Arabian desert. If Yahusha was lying, then Paul's witness is on behalf of a liar, and therefore would be witness. It would be worthless. So both Yahusha and Paul spoke about this specific happenstance, and since this issue is central to Paul's credibility and to the merits of Yahusha's advice regarding the reliability of a false prophet claiming to have seen him, a rational person can now close the book on Paul. If Yahusha was lying, then Paul's witness is on behalf of a liar and false prophet, and therefore is worthless. If Yahusha was telling the truth and his prophecy was accurate, then since Paul fulfills the admonition against such an individual, Paul's testimony is worth and worthless. It's counterproductive. It's demonic. It's false. So either way, you can have it either way. And if you are an informed, rational individual, you're going to close the book on Paul. The Christian New Testament is trash. The Christian religion is false. There's no other rational and informed conclusion, folks. That's it. It's over. If you have a Bible, rip Paul's letters from his pages. Yahusha told his disciples that from the moment he left this world to the time that he returned, as brilliant as the stars, and was seen by everyone at the same time, that anyone who claimed to have seen him, as Paul has now done, was a liar and should not be believed. And yet, as clear as his statement is, as irrefutable as this verdict may be, this realization is but one in many thousands which bury Paul. All that is left for us to do is to watch the vultures gather over his rotten corpse. returning to Paul's desperate, irritatingly repetitive, and almost pathetic attempts at setting himself up as God's lone authorized prophet to the world. If he had actually met with Yahweh, as Moshe had done, his testimony would have been unassailable. And it would have described the experience and then produced a written narrative recounting the word for word what Yahweh had said, all in keeping with the Torah's narrative. But we have nothing. Not a word from Paul or anyone else has ever been revealed regarding the lone event which would otherwise have authenticated Paul's authority. So when you contrast this missed opportunity with Paul's countless protestations that we should trust him because he was God's chosen messenger to the world, there is a credibility gap the size of the Great Rift. It is 0% possibility that any of this is true. Absolutely none. Third, in an upcoming chapter, it's called Jerusalem, the Source of Reconciliation, we're going to juxtapose Acts 15 with Galatians 2 in an effort to demonstrate that Paul's ability to accurately recount recent events in his own life was highly suspect. In this regard, the entire 15th chapter of Acts is devoted to describing what's called the Jerusalem Summit, sometimes called the Apostolic Conference, because this meeting was arguably the most important in Paul's life and in the history of the religion of Christianity. And yet, Paul's testimony in the second chapter of Galatians conflicts in every possible way with the historical narrative provided by Luke's in Acts. In fact, it becomes readily apparent that Paul had not written Galatians, that had Paul not written Galatians, as his rebuttal to Yahusha's disciples, his credibility would have been destroyed. But reason tells us that if Paul was willing to write a detailed revisionist account of a meeting, which was very well attended, and which had occurred within the previous few months, that his lone, unsupported assertion that he had gone to Arabia 19 years earlier to meet with God, for which there were no witnesses and no corroborating testimony, is of course suspect in the extreme. The reason, by the way, that Paul put his pen in harm's way when he claimed to have seen Yahusha, when he claimed to have met him and spent 3 years with him in Arabia, in the wilderness, is that he was clueless about Yahusha. He really was clueless about him. Had he actually known what Yahusha said, that Yahusha predicted that someone would make this claim, and that when someone made the claim not to believe them, there's no way that Paul would have made the claim. All that Paul is doing is saying, I confess that I'm the one that Yahusha warned everybody about not to trust. But Paul, like Muhammad, was clueless. So Paul admitted to the crime because he was clueless as to what Yahusha had said. That's the reason he did this. He actually knows nothing about anything Yahusha said or did. He doesn't get anything that Yahusha said or did right. He never quotes him. He makes one attempt, and in that attempt he miscites a snippet. He doesn't know him. He had no access to that prophecy, so he fulfilled it, but not in a good way. Folks, it's all out of complete ignorance. Now, fourth, as we review the reasons that Paul is incriminating himself regarding to this time in Arabia. As it turns out, the reason Shaul, Paul, was summoned to appear before Yahusha's disciples in Jerusalem was that he was preaching a message that was in irreconcilable conflict with the Torah. And since Yahusha's word and Yahweh's word was personally delivered by God to Moshe on Mount Horeb or spoken out of Yosha's mouth. The fact that Paul's message was entirely different means that either the source of Moshe's inspiration or Yosha's was hopelessly unreliable. Or that Paul was hopelessly unreliable. And this problem becomes insurmountable when we recognize that with his every word and deed, Yosha affirmed the very book that Paul is now assailing. That is a startling realization for most people, because the central thrust of Galatians is designated and designed to meticulously belittle and then annul the Torah. Shaul will say that the covenant memorialized on Mount Sinai was of Hagar, and that it was enslaving as a result. And we'll continue to look at the ways that Paul tried to annul God's word. Paul will go on to say that the Torah is akin to the flesh, and he will do so to a Gnostic Greek audience for the express purpose of demeaning it. He's going to call the Torah outdated. He's going to say that the Torah is an outmoded taskmaster. He reports that the Torah was a burden that no one could possibly bear. He will say that the Torah is incapable of saving anyone, all in this letter. And yet all of these things are in direct conflict with Yahweh's own testimony. Regardless, Paul will write that the Torah's usefulness had come to an end. Some useful document, huh? All it did was burden and enslave. Then he will say that this notion that the Torah was written to present the covenant, not true. That the covenant that's presented in the Torah actually enslaves as well. It's incapable of benefit, providing any benefit. All of this, of course, is in direct conflict with Yosha's Sermon on the Mount, which says exactly the opposite. He will say, Paul, in this letter, that there are two covenants, not one, even though Yahweh says there's only one. And he says that the one covenant is everlasting, which means that it did not come to an end. Therefore, since these messages are the opposite of one another, Yahweh, who is the acknowledged author of the Torah, cannot be the same spirit who served as Paul's inspiration. Oops. Fifth, the timeline Paul provided in Galatians, delineating the number of years which transpired between his conversion and the Jerusalem summit, is way too great. According to Paul's testimony in Acts 9, he spent a considerable period of time in Damascus, amazing the locals with his and confusing the Jews after his alleged conversion. That was Acts 9, 22 and 23. Let's assume this took place over the better part of a year. Then he claims to have gone off to Arabia for 3 years before returning to Damascus. That's Galatians 1, 17 and 18. Only to be lowered down the wall in a basket in Acts 9, 24 and 25 and 2 Corinthians 11, 32 through 33, where the story changed and he claimed to be fleeing a government official under the Arabian king Aretas, who died, by the way, before this letter was written and long before these events took place in 40 CE. Then he went to Jerusalem to meet with Shimon and Jacob. That's Galatians 1, 18 and 19. His travelogue continues through Syria and Cilicia, a journey which collectively transpired over the course of a year. Galatians 1, 21. However, in Acts 9, Shaul adds that he went to Caesarea, bypassing Syria, and then to Tarsus. That was Acts 9:30. But then Paul tells us that he was summoned to Jerusalem after the passage of another 14 years. That's Galatians 2:1. That, my friends, is a total of 19 years. dark years, as it would transpire, because we don't have a record of any sermon or any letter from Shaul during the decade after his alleged conversion. In fact, during much of this period, it is apparent that God's self-proclaimed messenger to the world, rather than revealing the message immediately, went into hiding. And that's a far cry from the immediacy of his mission in Galatians 1:16. But speaking of time, the timing of the Jerusalem summit is well documented. It's dated to 50 CE. So if you subtract 19 years, Shaul abuse at the hands of the prodding spirit on the road to Damascus would have occurred in 31 CE, 2 years before Yahusha fulfilled Passover. So Yahusha couldn't have appeared to him on the road to Damascus because he was in Jerusalem at the time. And if that weren't sufficiently incriminating, according to Shaul, he had spent additional time building an international reputation as the most ruthless assassin of Yehudim, who had been followers of the way before meeting the risen Yahusha, could have even occurred, thereby pushing it back to 29 CE, a year before Yahusha even chose his original disciples. It all means that Paul lied, and he couldn't remember his story one day to the next.